Hello and welcome to another episode of The Last Video Store, the show where I, Alexis Toliopoulos, talk to cool, funny, interesting, exciting people about their favorite movies, films, cinematic experiences. And we do it in the style of an old school video store rental combo where then the onus is thrust upon me where I must give them a staff pick recommendation based on their taste, based on their picks. And joining me on the show today, we've got a very special guest, a dear, dear friend of mine, one of my favorite comedy people in the country. You know them from Dragon Friends. You know them from Tonight at the Museum, the new show that they are hosting. And you know them from the podcast on this network called Baby Shoes, produced by our very own M.
Yes. Did you know that I was cheating on you with other podcasts?
I knew it and I was okay with it. I was like, we have one of those relationships where I go, she can do what she likes.
Yes.
She can do what she likes. All I can do is sit at home wondering where you are.
Yes, unfortunately, The Last Video Store is not my only gig at this point.
Yes.
Soon, I'm sure. But no, Baby Shoes is an amazing podcast that I love working on. It's hosted by Alex and her friend Tamara.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about products that kind of the algorithm.
Yeah.
Tells them to buy for their children or to be better mothers. And they kind of like prod fun at that
a little bit. They're so funny. Alex Lee is the guest today. I don't even know if I said her name.
Yeah.
But Alex Lee is the guest, one of my favorite comedy people. So funny. Baby Shoes is awesome.
Yeah.
I have listened to it. I don't even have a child. I'm famously child free.
I know. You actually don't have to be a parent to listen to it and enjoy it. It's just funny.
It's got two of the funniest people I've ever known in my life talking crazy stuff every episode. So big shout out to Baby Shoes, but also we'll talk about it with Alex in the episode too. But Alex is hosting a brand new ABC comedy panel show called Tonight at the Museum. Great show. I'm a guest on the episode that has just come out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch on ABC iView. You can watch it on ABC Terrestrial TV, 8:30 p.m. on a Wednesday or some shit. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing. I don't know if that's true. I'm guessing, but I reckon that's right because I know what time they play comedy on ABC.
Yeah.
So sometime around then, watch it. It's great. So great, great show. Really funny. A lot of the best comedy writers worked on it. And they shot it in an actual museum in Tasmania, which fucking rocks.
I remember you filming it and it sounded so cool.
Oh, I'd never been to Tasmania before. Yeah. And I went to the state cinema in Tasmania with Susie Youssef and we saw 10 Things I Hate About You in the cinema.
That's awesome.
It was one of the best movie experiences I've had in recent times. Great cinema. If you're in Tasmania, you have a great cinema. Go see movies at the state cinema. In the meantime, come see my comedy festival show. I'm like in the middle of it right now.
Mm-hmm.
As we're doing this, I will be in Melbourne kicking ass, selling tickets. My show is called VHS. I will tell a little bit more what it's about because I haven't really said that on this show yet. Basically, it is true stories from my life, several true stories that are funny and embarrassing, told in the style of the genres of cinema. There's a gangster movie story. There's a story that is in the style of horror like The Exorcist. There's a romance story. There's an adventure story about the first time I saw E.T. when I was a little boy. But it's I took these real stories from my life and I wrote them as if they were genre films.
That's awesome. And I can't wait to see them. I've got my ticket.
Oh, please.
It's in my hand. Damn it, this is video as well.
Yeah, she's lying. It's digital code. But show's called VHS. Come see it at Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Sydney Comedy Festival, which sold out. We've added an extra big show at the ticket links are all in the show notes. Brisbane's selling fast. Perth is now on sale too. So come see it there. Adelaide almost sold out entirely. And I had the best time in Adelaide. So if you saw the show in Adelaide, thank you very much. Love you very much. If you saw the show in Melbourne, I think this is coming out while I'm in Melbourne. Thanks. I burped in the middle of that. Let the record show. I didn't just pause for effect. I was burping. But thank you very much, babies. I'll see you at the movies or at my show. Long intro. Sorry. Joining me inside The Last Video Store today, we have got a dream guest, the host of Tonight at the Museum. I'm making it look like I'm reading up something, but I'm like, it's a blank screen.
What's my
name? No. Now, how do I pronounce this? joining me here on The Last Video Store today, a dream guest, a long time coming, the host of Tonight at the Museum, my dear friend, Alex Lee.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome to be had. Thank you for joining me.
I felt starstruck walking into this set.
Really?
It's beautiful.
Well, you were saying your dear husband, Benedict, is a big fan of the show.
He is,
and he's seething with jealousy.
He's at home furious right now that I'm here and not him.
Well, one day he will come on for sure.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Benedict, let it be known, we've talked about movies that you are in the show. Benedict Hardy is your husband, great actor, and star of Upgrade, one of my favorite Australian action films ever. So he'll be coming on, but this is about you.
Yeah,
screw that
guy.
That's
the last time we're going to mention
you. You're not picking any of his movies up, so we're not going to mention it at all. But Alex, take me back. Take me back in time. Allow my eyes to roll to the back of my head as I imagine your childhood, the video store that you went to.
Okay. The video store, the Bay Street, Civic Video, wow. I want to say. In Brighton, La Sands.
Oh, my God. There's guys hooning up and down that road.
Yeah, yeah. You could barely hear yourself think Friday night. Wow. We're allowed to go to the video store.
Brighton, La Sands. Yeah. I forgot that you grew up around that area.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite beach because there's no horizon. No. You can see the airport side and freight ships and stuff. I love Brighton.
Worst comes to worst, you float out.
Yeah, someone will catch you. Yeah, a plane will come catch you.
Yeah.
So tell me about Bay Street Civic.
I don't know. I just remember I have very happy memories of we used to play tennis in the afternoon and then we'd be allowed to go and choose a movie. I remember getting Something About Mary.
Oh, my God. Dare I say, and yes, the pun will be intended when I say it, what a seminal moment for a young person, a young comedy person to discover Something About Mary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I reckon that was one of those first movies where I go, my God, I'm so naughty watching this.
Yeah.
And I'm watching with my parents.
I think I watch it with my parents too. Okay, guess you know that I know what cum is.
I didn't know what it was when I watched it. they were like, no, it is hair gel. I go, okay, I guess.
All right. I probably thought that it would do that to your hair. I was like, write that down.
Write that down. Make sure it doesn't go in the hair. And if it does, to clean myself up. That's so funny. Well, Alex, you got a new show tonight at the museum. I'm lucky enough to be I was going to say contestant on this show.
Yeah, you're a player.
I'm a player. Tell the people about the show.
Yes, so this is a new show out on the ABC. It's on Wednesdays, 8 p.m. It's a show where we do a comedy panel, but we're inside a museum, the Tasmanian Museum and Art Gallery. So we have quiz questions, we have experts coming in, and we send the comedians out to wreak havoc and cause mischief.
I certainly caused mischief. I definitely wreaked havoc. But it was so cool because, you know, so many of these comedy panel shows, so many of them, all of them, are just like filmed in a studio. I thought it was actually quite a special experience lent so much to the show to be actually filming it inside this museum. In a place, in a city that you don't normally get to do these shows, so it's really cool, fresh audience getting interested in it.
The audience was so up for it.
Yeah.
They were really great and into it. And the museum were so excited to have us there looking at all their amazing collections.
Well, to gaze upon their wonders.
Yeah.
What was your favorite thing that you discovered while at this museum? Because it's I think this is a kind of show that I like where there is so much great comedy in it. Obviously, great comedy writers working on it. You, Sarenjay Amana, Josh Earl is a head writer, Kate Dennett,
Rob Braslin.
So many funny people writing on this show. So it's the top tier comedy minds, but also they're serving a different purpose in that hey, how do I make you laugh? But I'm also going to impart some new knowledge upon you.
Yeah.
And you get to learn about all this crazy, weird shit that's kept in this amazing museum. What was the coolest thing that you learned about?
Oh, there was so much. I mean, one of the things I thought was so amazing was this, the only feather we have from this emu, the King Island emu that went extinct so quickly because it was this tiny mini emu that only lived on one island in Tasmania.
Oh, gosh.
And the people who came to hunt seals landed there and they were like, oh, these emus are so slow and delicious and easy to catch. And they just they wiped them out. But the last remaining emu got taken to France to Napoleon's consort.
So you could have a look at it.
Josephine. She collected Australian animals. So for a long time, the only surviving King Island emu was in this palace garden in France.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, because of Napoleon's wife.
Because Josephine collected little Aussie battlers, Aussie animals. Yeah. She likes a marsupial or two.
They were obsessed with Australia. It was like going to a new planet. So there's islands that belonged to the French at one stage, like in Europe, that have Australian wattle on them because they collected them from Australia and brought it back. Yeah.
That's I mean, probably it's evil, but also I feel emotional if I saw wattle in Europe, you know? I feel really proud. Totally. Well, Alex, we're here to talk about your favorite movies.
Yes.
So I'm going to send you out of the store. I'll give you a little carry bag. We'll give you a tote bag to carry around. Pick out some films. One new film from the last couple of years. Uh-huh. Two all-time favorites. Bring them back. Let's talk about them.
Okay.
And then I will have to try to recommend to you a recommendation based on your taste. That is my duty.
Exciting.
I'm honor bound.
All right. Can I get snacks?
Yes, you can. What snacks would you like? I have to do this at the counter now.
Can I have some jelly snakes?
Some jelly snakes, of course. Do you want them alive? Do you want a lifestyle
snakes?
Or do you want to kill a python?
I thought you were going to do that Husey bit at me just then.
If you mess with the king, you will get those fangs. So you cannot do Husey's bit.
All right, I'll do a killer python.
Okay, well, we have them ready for you. I'm gonna hunt down a killer python. I've heard they're delicious but extremely slow.
New release.
Oh, what a wonderful batch of films you've got here.
Oh, thank you.
New release film, hot in your hands right now. I'm desperate to talk about this film. You're the first one to pick this up. First one to get this new release film. It's going out to you first. You have got from master filmmaker Park Chan-wook his latest film, No Other Choice.
Yes.
I thought this was such a wicked film.
Same.
Are you a Park Chan-wook fan?
I don't think I've seen his whole oeuvre.
Ooh.
I've seen I've seen Old Boy, I think, back
of
in the
course.
Day. But like I went into it pretty blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just thought it was incredible. I was just like wrong-footed at every turn. Every time I thought I knew what the movie was, it was like, psych!
Tell us about No Other Choice.
Okay, so this is a film about a man who is an executive in a paper company. And he freaking loves working at this paper company.
It's his bread and butter. He loves the paper.
Yeah, it's like the ante The Office.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with paper. And that makes you want to love paper too.
Yeah.
But then he gets laid off when the company gets bought by a US company, and then they have to he gets made redundant and there's no other jobs in paper, and he finds out that the only thing that he can do is start a fake paper company,
mm-hmm.
pretend he's advertising for jobs, get other executives to apply for that so he can hunt them down and kill them.
He can find out who his actual competition is.
That's
and
it.
Then slowly snuff them out.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's like this is such a fun film. Like I think Park Chan-wook is a master of tone and a master of pace. And I think what he's able to do with this film is find those moments of humor. And then they intertwined with these moments of like great genre writing. Like there's one moment where he's hunting down one of these guys and he enters his home. This guy's been fighting with his wife and the music is playing so loud. And so you can only hear what they're saying because they've subtitled like what is being said. And I think there's this way the scene builds up both comedically and builds up in like this kind of crime thriller aspect as well. You go, far out. Only Park Chan-wook can control these two things at the same time.
Totally. And it's so funny, I think, because of that, because you're so tense leading up to it. And then it's thrilling but also completely farcical, and there's so much insane physical comedy. Especially in that scene.
Talk me through some of that physical comedy.
Oh, I mean, it was just, what are they doing? They're trying to, everyone think that, so he breaks into this house to kill the guy, and the guy's fighting with his wife, mm-hmm. and then they're all just turning on each other.
Everyone's turning on each other. And there's also this moment where, on that physical comedy where he has his gun, but it's under like a...
It's like under
a oven mitt. There's like several of them, so he has to keep peeling them off to start threatening him.
Yeah.
And something about that was just such a fun genre moment.
Yeah.
Because you see it so often where someone's got their gun hidden and they just shoot through the glove or the mitt. But I think here, just like peeling all those layers off, I thought was so funny.
Yeah, yeah. And just to have this, you know, to like, I guess, fight that urge that like an American Western filmmaker would have to make him really heroic.
Mm-hmm.
He just remains like ridiculous and bumbling and scared and all those things that you never get to see with these movies. Like I watched it at the movies, and there was a trailer for that Glenn Powell movie. I'm going to kill everyone to get some money.
Similar plot, yeah.
Such a weird thing because it was like you could so easily – like to have that in my mind as I was watching it, being like I thought he was going to transform into this like cold-blooded assassin, like have his sort of Breaking Bad moment, and then it just wasn't that at all. Like he was still just a very ordinary guy out of his depth.
I think it's something really fun. Like this actor, Lee Byung-hun, who is the star of this film – probably best known to audiences from Squid Game, but it's his, I think his second or third work with Park Chan-wook. They made JSA, Joint Security Area, together back in 2000, I think. And so it's nice to see them partnering up together again. And I think that that performance by him, he plays it so well where he all, like, it's hard to even describe because there's a theatricality to the performance. Yeah. It's not like a naturalistic performance that he's bringing to this. And the world of this film has like this kind of heightened energy. And I think it works really well because it suits the plot, but I think that's where the humor comes from as well. There is a previous adaptation of this book. I think the book is an American book.
Yes.
And it was adapted by the Greek-French filmmaker Costa Gavras, who probably is like best known for, he made Z, which is like one of the great thrillers of all time, great political thrillers. And I, before No Other Choice came out, I was like, I really want to see this version. I want to track it down.
Yeah.
And because I do love Costa Gavras. And when I saw that film, what really surprised me was the original film's called The Axe. It's from like the mid-2000s, 2005. What really struck me is that is this film, this plot is like a dark comedy, like a very dark satirical comedy on whatever the current state of, I guess, corporate commercialized pressure is on specific industry. Mm. And in Gavras's film, Gavras is not a funny filmmaker. The guy doesn't have it. He's not funny in that way. He's like, he can make the greatest thrillers of all time, really politically incisive movies.
Yeah.
And I guess because there's a political edge to this film or a societal edge to it, he can hone in on there. And I was just watching it like, oh, man, the guy just does not have the stuff to make it funny, but it still worked. It's an entertaining film.
Yeah, right. Had you read the original book?
I don't read books, mate. Okay. No. I will see if there's an original movie. I'll watch the movie. But a book, my God. A book
I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said that word.
You come into my home and excuse me of reading? No, thank you. I like the visual arts. But I think just even knowing Park Chan-wook was going to take this, oh, he's going to make this so wildly entertaining. Mm-hmm. He's got this unconventional shot construction that I think works so well. And watching Park Chan-wook here, what he does with his films, like he's got this modern, I don't know how else to describe it because it's got, I think he shoots phones better than anyone else, phones and screens than anyone is doing currently.
I don't know if I noticed that when I watched it. So what do you mean?
He does a lot with the reflection. So there'll be times where someone's looking at the phone, but you see their reflection in the phone. Mm. And there's something about the way that he shoots phone or the way that he understands phone. He knows phone. Yeah. I think he knows that people need phone.
It took us such a long time to be good at phone. Like, do you remember like how clunky it was? Like, we're trying to incorporate it. Like, what was and House of Cards? Do you remember that?
Oh,
and it was
yeah.
like boop boop boop, and
it's
like
going to come up on the screen.
Pop up, and it's like.
And do you remember how cool that was for a second? Yeah. You're like, whoa, they're showing the text message on screen.
That's crazy.
Awesome. Yeah. I'm seeing a tweet bird fly in and deliver a tweet when I see people
reading.
Yeah,
they're always like on like I'm on Fossbonk or something. Like it's never
but he does something that I think is quite remarkable with it. I go, oh, this is how like Hitchcock would incorporate it or something.
Yeah.
And I think seeing it in he did it in Decision to Leave was the first time I started noticing the way that he was shooting phone. But now it's even more, dare I say, profound use of it in No Other Choice. And it makes me surprised more people haven't been stealing it from him because they just go, the guy can shoot phone so well.
Yeah.
I mean, I use phone every day. I've never thought of an unconventional way to shoot it.
I know.
He's thinking about totally unconventional ways.
Yeah.
Why else did you pick No Other Choice? Why did it kind of stick with you as a film that you've seen recently?
I mean, I think I had a full Korean cinema experience. I went to
take me on this
Sydney
journey.
Tuna in Lidcombe. So we had a date night and we went and had wonderful Korean fatty tuna.
Yum.
At this place in Lidcombe. Then we went to the Korean mall in Lidcombe. And then we went to Burwood and had a bubble tea. So it felt I feel like that was part of it. I feel like I had like a gastronomical.
I think so. You experience. Went on the full journey.
Well, I did a dinner theatre, basically.
You did dinner theatre. You went the full immersive experience. And that was a big part of it.
So, you know. But I just.
And Burwood Cinema, that's my local one. That's crazy. It can be crazy there sometimes. Yeah. People threw Maltesers at my girlfriend recently.
What?
Yeah. I'm like, we're like 30 years old. You can't throw Maltesers at us anymore.
Doing? What were you guys doing making out?
Oh, we were watching the movie. I don't do anything disrespectful in the cinema. Let it be known.
So you were minding your own business and people were throwing
people. Maybe it was a Maltesers popcorn. Maybe it was a Malteser. It can be hectic in there.
That's crazy.
But it's dog eat dog. I go, I'm not going to say anything.
I saw Nirvana, the band, the movie the other day.
Yeah.
And someone was sobbing behind me. It was a real mood killer.
That's, I mean, there's not many emotional moments in that movie to get you all the way there.
Yeah.
Wow.
So anyway, but yeah, I mean, I just thought it was so sort of like the satire was so concise and bleak and like just the final image of that film. I don't want to ruin it, but just stay with me that, you know, I don't know how to talk about it without spoiling it, that he's achieved what he wanted, but, you know, what?
It's in a monkey paw fashion, perhaps.
Yes. Yeah. Big corporate monkey paw. And to be able to make such an amazing, like, political point, but having gone on this crazy ride and for it to be so funny, I don't know, I just thought it was such impressive filmmaking.
Yeah, I think you're bang on. I think it really is. Like, I really believe that this is some of his best work. But also what it does so well is just like get that point across to just make you, you know, have a fun way to think about, oh, yeah, industry's kind of fucked now by all these technological advancements and stuff. It is really just pushing people out of work. And I think there's to have a middle class version of, or like, you know, upper middle class version of that in this film. I think there's something that works really nicely. Also, extra shout out to the acts, the Cost of a Rust film. If you can track it down, it is worth checking out. I cannot speak on the Donald E. Westlake novel, nor will I. I don't know if I ever will read it. But that is your new release film, No Other Choice, a wonderful pick. And now we're wandering into the weekly section.
Weekly.
I picked up two like really great comedy films. One of them, should we go? Do you want to go to the 90s or do you want to go to the slightly newer first?
Should we go to the 90s?
Let's go to the 90s because you picked up a film that is very near and dear to my heart.
Oh, really?
A filmmaker who I think exemplifies much of what this show does. He is one of the idols of the video store, Mr. Kevin Smith. And you picked up from 1999 his fantasy epic, Dogma.
Comedy.
About an abortion clinic worker with special heritage who's called upon to save the existence of humanity from being negated by two renegade angels trying to exploit a loophole and re-enter heaven with heaps of dick and penis jerks along the way. I love this film. And I rewatched it again a couple of years ago and I loved it just as much as I did as a teenager.
Yeah.
When was the last time you went back to Dogma? Because this is a real teen comedy nerd film.
This was like one of the very first movies that I watched. I would have been in like year 7 or 8 when it came out. And I was like obsessed.
Wait, you didn't see movies until you were like 14 years old?
Oh, no. Oh, no, that's true. By myself. I guess myself as like, you know. I went to Hurstville Westfield with my friend Maria and we watched it. And, you know, I was just, it just, you know, those things that when you're a teenager and they just blow your mind wide open, you go, I didn't know that movies could do this. And I went to an Anglican school, like a very strict Anglican girls' school. And I was like, I can't believe they're talking about God and Jesus like this. And it was so funny and like edgy and dark and like talking about these big ideas. And, you know, it was ridiculous. But then there's these crazy long like monologues about religion and
great
stuff.
Great monologues, I think. And, you know, the ones performed by like Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, I think they're so, like, they're really good.
You just watch. It sort of was dormant in my mind for so long. Like, I don't think I would have thought about Dogma for a couple of years. Mm. And then I remembered, I was like, oh my God, this was like a huge movie for me. I think discovering my own comedic sensibility at a young age. Like, I'm a middle child, so I was always just watching like Shrek for the millionth time or like Miss Congeniality for the millionth time because like my brother and sister watched those movies. So I think that was one of the first ones I had where I was like, oh no, this is me. Like, I love this.
You're Kevin Smith.
Yeah. And so I watched this morning is the last time that
you
watched it.
You watched it this morning?
I revisited.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Tell me about going back today.
Oh, you know what? there's some things that have not dated that well.
Of course. But that's the passage of time is cruelest to comedy.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. Like so many of the jokes are like someone misunderstanding that the other person might be gay.
Yeah. That's a lot of Kevin Smith early humor, like gay stuff. But I would say Chasing Amy, I think, has aged in an interesting way. I think that, Chasing Amy, because it's obliquely about that, I think that that movie has aged interestingly. Like, it's aged well in one sense. In another sense, like by today's standards, probably politically incorrect, but it stands as a document of a really up-to-date, nuanced conversation at exactly like 1995 or whenever that movie came out. But so that's the one I think is age interesting. But Dogma, I had like a really pleasurable experience going back to it because I was like, I think I went back to it when Cam and I were doing a podcast series about Kevin Smith. We did, I think, 3 episodes where we were like, we want to just talk about Kevin Smith for a while and like break down his career into different sagas really or different eras. And I think Dogma is like truly him at like the height of every power he had. The best he is as a writer, the best he is as a visual filmmaker.
Yeah.
Because he really is not a visual filmmaker. This one looks pretty okay. And then also like with just his ambition, like it is, it's so interesting to have like this really huge and thoughtful world building and his comedy, which I think is so like his comedy is just so everyday the way people talk.
Yeah.
But then it weirdly fits so nicely into like this fantasy epic that he's created alongside it. And I go, how is this guy able to do that?
Yeah. It's so different to the other films. I mean, I guess I would maybe, I didn't have the love for it that I had when I watched it when I was a teenager.
Well, you know, it was a little bit
because you were like, your taste.
You've done edgier stuff in this movie probably as well, you know. You've worked in edgier comedy than Dogma now, 20 years later.
And I guess we take away that element of shock because you're like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, I'm not that like, oh, my God, I can't believe you talked about Jesus like that anymore. But, I mean, yeah, there was so much I still loved about it. I love that, like, I have still so many images that are so clear in my head. Of, you know, how, you know, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck in those like hoodies and jackets that are sort of like reverse colors of each other that sort of look like their armor they have at the end, like Alan Rickman sprouting the wings. Oh, God. I was blown away by how many famous people were in that movie. Like,
so many, right?
George Carlin's? I didn't know who George Carlin was when I watched it the first time.
And like Chris Rock is probably like maybe the best he's ever used in a film. Yeah. Like, I think he just works in this one. The other one who recently, he just passed away, was Bud Cort, who plays John Doe Jersey.
Very small role,
but a pivotal role.
Yeah, yeah.
And like he just passed away, but he was a great, great actor of many great films. Ah. But I think Dogma is like one of those films where I think, oh yeah, Bud Cort was in that movie. Alanis Morissette. But I also love Linda Fiorentino. Yes,
that blew me away today when I watched it. How like grounded her performance is, like, it just allows everyone else to go crazy around her. And just, you know, that sort of like amazing, like dead-eyed stare she sort of has where she's like, is she quite here? Like, you sort of feel like her character is not quite processing everything that's happening to her. She's almost like in a daze-like state. And I thought, like, and then I started reading about it, and apparently they had a terrible time on set, like Kevin Smith and Linda Fiorentino, and that was like one of the last movies she ever made. Like, she basically got,
she was someone that got like definitely like pushed out of Hollywood, blacklisted. But she has like a run of like some of the coolest films ever. Men in Black.
Yes, obviously great in Men in Black.
I think she's fantastic Men in Black. She's great in After Hours, the Martin Scorsese film, Dogma, The Last Seduction, which is a cool noir film, and Jade, another noir film from the 90s, not like mid-90s. Vision Quest, which is like a wrestling picture from like I think the 80s. But I think she has like this great presence, right? Where she has like this darkness, this edge to her that I think enhances the comedy. And I think she makes everything really fucking cool.
Totally. Yeah. And I think it's funny, like I read a bit of the interviews that Kevin Smith said afterwards. Like, he was like, she was doing drama when we were making a comedy movie and, like, she refused to do it. I was like, no, you are so lucky you had her probably refusing all of your directions.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it made the film for me watching it now.
It really does. Like, I think you said, she enhances every scene that she is in. She grounds it. She allows this whole film to work, really.
Yeah.
This is like a fucking bizarre road trip with, like, gods and demons and angels and shit.
There's a shit monster.
You've got Jay and Silent Bob in it as well. Like, it's got everything that shouldn't work. But because I think she has, like, this – she's grounded. Mm. But there's a cynicism to that she brings to it that works for that character because it's kind of, like, against the grain for that character at some points. I just think she really makes it work.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I think I mean, just watching, like, young Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, you're like – They're superstars. Like, yeah. You can tell they're so good. They're just, like, so magnetic. And I also loved Jay. What's – I don't
– Jason Mewes.
Jason Mewes.
One of my heroes.
The way I'd forgotten about, like, the sort of cadence and the way he talks, it's, like, almost like poetry. It's, like, sort of this lyrical way of talking and, like, it's got its own rhythms and beats. And even though he's just, like, mostly just trying to have sex with – one lady the whole time. Like, he says nothing profound, but, like, yeah, made me remember why that was such a beloved character.
I'm going to say right now, there's a fat guy somewhere in the world listening to this podcast and you saying Jason Mewes is like poetry. He just started crying. I've got tears in my eyes thinking about that. I know the fat guy was me. I'll be honest, it's me. I think there's that's so true. It's so true. It's so beautiful. Like, you know, it actually cannot be overstated what a megastar Kevin Smith was to people of our generation, of, like, what comedy on the big screen could be. I don't know, man. I always want the best for Kev. I love Kev so much.
And I'm so glad the movie was, like, you couldn't watch it anywhere for ages because Harvey Weinstein had the rights to it.
Have you heard the story?
I've, like, read tiny bits of it today.
There's, like, this story of, like, so Harvey Weinstein had the rights to it because he produced a lot of Kevin Smith's early films, I think almost all of them, if not all of them. And then Kevin, he, I believe, had, like, a falling out. And when the Weinstein case was just starting to break, like, when the story was coming out, he was trying to find, I guess, like, he rang Kev and was like, hey, I was thinking maybe we do something with Dogma again, because Kevin had always been trying to get Dogma to get something with Dogma.
Yeah.
And he was like, wow, yeah, okay, great. And then, like, the story came out the next day and Kevin's found out that it was because Weinstein was calling everyone to see who he could trust, like, who he could trust, who had been broken the story. And he was like, anyone that answered the phone, he knew that they hadn't done it or something like that.
Oh, that's so funny.
And it's like this thing of just, like, you're like, oh, fuck, it's another more years of him not getting Dogma. But it's like, yeah, what a little rat, little scurry rat to hear that story. But now it's like this thing where Dogma was unavailable for a long time. My friend Blake Howard, dear friend of this show, he had a Blu-ray copy signed by Kevin Smith and he lent it to me because I wanted to watch it again because it was on nothing. I was like, this is fucking worth like $700 in my head. But now there's this beautiful remaster, this new 4K that's out there. Highly recommend people picking it up. There's an Umbrella 4K in Australia that looks beautiful. But this, I'm so glad you picked up this movie. I'm so glad I remembered it.
I'm so glad
you picked it up. Beautiful film, Dogma. And, oh, actually, another connection to Dogma. Our dear friend Cameron James.
Yeah.
He asked Kevin Smith a question once. I believe it was in a Reddit AMA. Reddit Ask Me Anything. He asked Kevin, were you inspired by Wings of Desire when you made Dogma? Because the angels have a similar look and it's about angels being on Earth. And he was like, yeah, man, I love that movie.
And Kevin, on the same wavelength as Kevin?
Yeah.
So good.
That is Dogma, one of the great pickups. A perfect video store movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Did you ever pick this up from the video store?
Yeah, we would have. Yeah. I definitely would have forced my family to rewatch it with me.
And you've got one final film. This is a film that I had not seen until you brought it to my, not to my attention. I knew this movie. I hadn't seen it yet.
Yeah.
But it is directed by another alum of the Last Video Store. You've picked up from previous guest, Michelangelo Corvino, his 2019 film, The Climb.
comedy.
Yes.
I had been meaning to watch this because I loved Splitsville so much. And I think even you and some other friends were telling me how good The Climb was.
Yeah.
I was like, I'd been meaning to watch it. I'm so glad you picked up because I could finally watch this excellent, excellent film.
Oh, I was, when you said you hadn't watched it yet and you were going to, I was like so excited that you were going to see it. And I watched it again last night.
It's just so up my alley. Yeah. I'd love for you to kind of tell people what The Climb is about because I think Splitsville probably made some new fans, especially listeners of this show. I got a lot of feedback saying how much they love Splitsville and how they wouldn't have seen it if we didn't have Michael on. So I think The Climb is a great next step for these people to find another very modern stylistic comedy that they will fall in love with.
Yeah. So this was his first feature film, writing and directing, and with Kyle Marvin as well. And it is about a friendship between these two guys over time. And it's like vignette is the word I was thinking of. It's like these sort of vignettes through time of their relationship and
broken up into chapters.
And it sort of covers like quite a lot of similar thematic ground to Splitsville. You know, it's about this sort of toxic friendship. They've been friends for a really long time. They keep sort of coming back into each other's lives, ruining them in one way or another. But it's kind of a love story.
Yeah, between two men. Yeah.
And, you know, how they rely on each other. And it's so funny. I was really so blown away by the first scene. I still think that's the funniest opening scene in any movie I've ever seen. It's long. It's this long shot of these two guys struggling to ride up a hill in the middle of France, and one of them tells the other guy that he's been sleeping with his fiance, and then he pedals off and he's heaps better at bike riding than his
friend. I cannot catch up.
And just like, having been told this devastating information, but then like he's still encouraging him to go up the hill. It's such a funny dynamic. I think they started making that film, its genesis was just that, as a short film. And then they realized they could sort of extend it out. And you can see it's like the perfect short film in a way.
It really is. It would win Tropfest in a heartbeat.
Oh, easily. Yeah, yeah.
But I think you're right. Like that first scene is so evocative of like what this film does best, which is these two really funny performers that work so well together because they are not the same at all. Like their styles comedically just mesh really well with each other. And what they do is like they find this like this dynamic between them that is continually explored throughout the film, but it's also putting them inside a weird set piece. Like who would like what a weird set piece to be like in this beautiful countryside, riding bikes up this mountain, having like the complete breakdown of a friendship is so fun. But what also does so well, and I talked to Michael about this when he did the podcast, is his inspiration comes from so much like Italian comedy, like especially Italian comedy from the 1960s. So these films are all really beautifully shot. They have like a style to them. And I think you don't see so much comedy that has this style brought to it.
True.
And seeing this where it's like every shot looks great. Michael is very patient with the camera. He allows like a shot to just slow and build. It's almost edit in camera where the shot is unbroken for so long. You don't have that relief of tension from a cut happening. And then in this, like this opening scene, like there's so much going on in like these frames. I was quite astounded by this.
Like
I love Splitsville, but I think The Climb is like an even more interesting achievement because it's like, it's comedic theory of just having these two guys work so well and then the other people that and how their relationships affect their relationships with other people.
Yeah.
And rather than being like, I think Splitsville is like a great comedy about modern relationships and how they can work in a contemporary world. He was like, this could have happened at any point in time. It's the way that male friendships can suck and be weird and like have this weird internal conflict with each other and this competitiveness. I just found it so pleasurably like weird and heartbreaking and icky and funny and strange. I loved this film.
Oh, great. Yeah. I think you're right about the camera work. Like it's not edited comedically. You almost feel like the camera's sort of going to drift away. Yes. And it feels like it's like sometimes it feels like it doesn't want to be there, you know? And it's like, oh, these guys, can I just leave for a second?
Let's just not see them have this.
Yeah, circling
Let's
around.
Let's pan
them.
Away to a Citroen for a little bit and show you an old 1950s car. It's like, I think it's just so, so cool. Like, and it's got like, it marries that with like this kind of like a mumblecore feeling as well. I found it really great.
Like 2000s.
Yeah, that 2000s indie feeling. Like I worked so great. And then seeing, I think I had a preconceived notion going in that it was just going to be scene one, but like that chapter just spread out over a thing and it would be progressively their biking would get more difficult and that would be the tension of the film. But I think just like going, no, this is like a decade. It's like this totally. Was set over like maybe 20 years or something.
Yeah.
And I think that's like such a fun way to approach it. Great cast as well. Oh. George Wendt plays one of their dads. From Cheers.
Oh, I didn't make that connection. Yeah, yeah.
I loved it. And I think like-
And Gail Marvin is so good.
Oh, so good. Like just like a really, really great cast. And Todd Barry's in it for a second. Like I think this is such a cool film. I really think like people that like this show will really get into it.
Yeah, it's got that little, it's a little bit more arty, I guess, or indie sort of like those- weird like little musical dance or song interludes.
Yes. Yeah.
Is that an Italian cinema thing?
I don't know exactly. I think it is a little bit. Maybe more like, you know, not so much like the overt comedies, but maybe something a bit more like, you know, like a Fellini or whatever. There'd be like moments like that where it kind of like would dip into a surrealism or a more cinematic kind of feeling.
Yeah.
I think it's really natural in the way that in Michelangelo Covino is able to do it. I think he extends on that so well in Splitsville. Did you see Splitsville as well?
Yeah, yeah.
How did you feel about Splitsville?
I had a really good time. I guess I was always comparing it to one of my favorite movies in the back of my head. I was like, whoa, look how hot the girls are that they can get to be in their movies now.
I think it was as well. Like,
that
the
was
thing
my was, biggest. I was like, go.
The boys did it. They got movie stars in their movie. Yeah. It's not just George Wendt anymore. But it's like that thing as well. Like I think Splitsville does it so well, like with that fight sequence where he's able to enhance like these moments comedically by really pushing it cinematically, by going like, I'm going to go so big. And I think it was a thing that I said to him was like, style can be funny. And I think those things are so evident in The Climb as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck, I loved this, man. Such a good film.
Great. Yeah, yeah. Really fun.
Staff pick.
We have come to a point where I have to give you a recommendation. A star pick recommendation. And The Climb, because it was such a great experience watching it, was where I really landed. Because The Climb reminded me of one of my favorite films of all time. If I was in your seat doing this show, it might be one of my picks.
Oh, wow.
Actually, so this is... It is a mumblecore comedy from 2009, and this is one of the movies that maybe meant the most to me when I saw it and has kind of endured in that place because it landed at exactly the right time. Saw it just when I was graduating high school, when I worked in a video store, Mondo Movies in Andale, and I'd heard about this because I'd heard about it on a film podcast. And film podcast was very new to me at that time. Going, wow. I'm learning about movies.
Yeah.
But this is a movie from one of my favorite filmmakers, Lynn Shelton, her 2009 film, Hump Day.
Comedy.
Have you heard of Hump Day?
I have heard of it.
Tell me
about it.
It stars Mark Duplass, who is like the king of the mumblecore, alongside Joshua Leonard, who people would know because he was, I would say, a groundbreaking force in mumblecore, not just for Hump Day. He starred in maybe what I might say is one of the early mumblecore films. He was a star of The Blair Witch Project.
Oh.
So he's well-versed in this. And these are two best friends that they went to – I think they went to college together. They became best friends in college and then they drift apart. But it's about them kind of coming back together in their 30s where one of them, Mark Duplass, has got a wife. He's trying to start a family. He's a little bit more buttoned up than he was in college. And Joshua Leonard is more, I guess, a drifting type guy, more a silly kind of like schlubby guy. And they go to this party together and they hear about this competition about, it's like an art festival or a film festival for pornographic films. And they were like, we should make a porno where we fuck each other. And it'll be like this beautiful thing about us reconnecting and bringing our friendship back together. And that's just like the starting point for this film. And I think it's like,
wow.
That is like the weird comedy premise for this film. But really, like something like The Climb, it's a film about a really real tender male friendship and also about the nature of art. Like this is a film about the nature of art in a very mumblecore way. And it's just one of those things where I first saw it, not unlike seeing a Kevin Smith for the film for the first time, to go back to circle another one of your choices into the big. But seeing a film like that at that time for me, go like, wow, you can just make a fucking movie.
Mm.
Like, that's what the mumblecore movement, I think, did most for a lot of people. It's like, you can just make it. You can just you can get your friends together. They can be funny. You can just film them making a movie. And it's just this movie that resonated with me about masculinity, male friendships, art, and also just being like a straight up great goofy buddy comedy as well. And the last time I watched it was, I think the day after Lynn Ramsey passed away. And I was oh, I've been thinking about her when she passed away. I was like, couldn't stop thinking about her. I want to see that film. And I was just like, God, no, it still means the world to me, that film.
Oh, amazing.
So that's Hump Day.
Thank you. I'll definitely watch it.
I think you'll really love it. Like, I go, if I was in your seat, I go, maybe Hump Day would be one of the ones I pick, because it was such a video store movie for me, a true discovery. And like, I think it shaped an early part of my pursuits in comedy, was like going, you can make stuff like Hump Day. You can just be funny and write things, but also try and be thoughtful with like the way that you're talking about stuff, or the way that you're exploring something through a different perspective. And I just, Lynn Shelton, one of my heroes. Hump Day, truly, probably top 20 favorite movies of all time for me.
Amazing.
And you're going home with a beautiful copy of it today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Alex, thank you so much for joining me in the Last Video Store. Julie, I wanted to have you on this podcast for so much time, so I'm glad it worked out.
I'm so thrilled. I had such a wonderful time.
And you've got Tonight at the Museum. It is on ABC TV. It's also on ABC iView. I believe the episode that I have done it's out right now.
It's out.
Check it out. It's watch so good. Me.
Alexi's very funny.
I had a great time because it was me and Nazim Hussain.
Yes.
Claire Hooper, who I love. Claire Hooper is a good friend of mine. But Genevieve Morris, who I'd never met before, and I've idolized her maybe my entire life.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think of her as like maybe the most talented comedic actor we have in this country. So I was like a bit in awe of her.
Oh, I didn't know. You didn't seem starstruck. You were very cool.
Well, I played it cool. Yeah, Let's just say she's not the only comedic actor with some talents that could play multiple things at once. I was really I was so starstruck when I found out I was going to be on with Genevieve Morris. I was like, oh my God.
She's so fucking cool.
She was crazy.
She was telling me that she just works at Bunnings.
Really?
Yeah.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah, just do it on the weekend. Great way to chat to people.
That's really good. She's like, she's so funny.
She's in Deadlock, the new season.
Oh, God, I can't wait to watch Deadlock, the new season. Well, she's one of the best. God, she's awesome. I'll tell you when we turn on the mic, I'll tell you something else
better. Okay, great.
But thanks so much for joining me, Alex. You're the best.
Bye.
You're a rock star.
Oh, thank you.
The Last Video Store.
Wowza, what a great episode with Alex Lee, one of the funniest people. Check out her podcast, Baby Shoes. Also watch Tonight at the Museum. And also, why don't you come see me at the Comedy Festival, Melbourne International Comedy Festival. I'm doing my show VHS here all month long. Brisbane, Sydney, added a new show in Sydney, and Perth on sale as well now. Tickets in the show notes.
You got a lot to do if you're listening to this. You got some things to consume.
Consume me. Consume me live. Wow. I'll say I did it in Adelaide. I'm going to do a couple of meetups, like meet and greets after the show. Because if you want like an actual staff pick recommendation from me, I'll announce it on my Instagram what day I'll do like a little meet and greet after.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome just to do it after Adelaide. Just a bunch of people go, here are my three movies. I go, you will love this.
Return Shoot Rats.
We launched the Return Shoot Rats scurrying out to me post show.
A Return Shoot Rat King.
No, you're Return Shoot Rat King. I want to get you all together and scribble your tails together.
I'm so glad you knew what I was talking about.
I will love the Rat Kings. God, imagine we opened the return sheet and there was fucking like six rats that had been fused
together. You know I
together.
Love rats. And I would take that little rat king home and I would love him.
Even a rat king?
Yes. Good Lord. Yes. Mate. I love all animals. You know this. And you know, hate all animals.
I had a pet mouse. I had a pet mouse for a couple of years.
Oh my God. I was picturing you as kind of a Lenny of, yeah. of mice and men Lenny. Like no. if you tried to love an animal, you'd accidentally crush
no,
it.
No, no. Joyce, my mouse, did die of cancer. Not my Aww. Crushing hand. Aww. Well, she, you know, we, this is too much to talk about on a podcast, but I had a pet mouse called Joyce. It was inherited from one of my stepbrother's friends. I think it was named after his mum or something. Joyce is a weird name for a mouse.
Yeah.
And she had a cancer. We could see the big tumor on her. And I remember we took her to the vet and they were like, oh, it's going to cost a lot of money to have this thing. And I remember my dad talking to me about it. She was like, my dad was like, listen, I know mice are pretty inexpensive. They're only like $2 to buy from a pet store, but Joyce is not just any mouse.
Oh my God, and paid like, for the surgery?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No way. Yeah. That is not where I thought I was going. Because
I loved Joyce. I loved my little mouse.
Oh my God, yeah. That's so sweet.
Very sweet creature. That was my last pet, I think. I was 13 or something, 12 or 13 when Joyce died.
And the time to get a new mouse or a rat.
Oh, no way now. Way, mate. No way. Not now.
We got to wrap this up.
That was the perfect pet to end on.
And the perfect note to end this out on.